From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 709, Managing Your Hybrid Cloud Using Azure Arc with guest Thomas Maurer. Recorded Monday, June 29th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Thomas Maurer, who is a senior cloud advocate at Microsoft, and he engages with the community and customers around the world to share his knowledge and collect feedback to improve the Azure cloud platform. And prior to joining the Azure engineering team, Thomas was the lead architect and a Microsoft MVP to help architect, implement, and promote Microsoft cloud technology. So used to be an MVP, crossed over onto the blue badge side. This is a story. I've heard this story a few times.
Yeah, I'm definitely not the first one. It happened to a lot of my friends, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you know the community as well as I do.
Sure.
Over the years, a lot of MVPs basically then suddenly switched to become a blue badge.
Yeah, Microsoft employee. Well, and the reason is pretty simple. You don't become an MVP without having a passion for a product. Like, that's sort of reality. And sometimes you can translate that passion into a career.
Absolutely, yeah. The MVP program is really, from my standpoint, it was really, really great. Because again, you had a passion about the product, as mm-hmm. you said, right? And then you get awarded and you get these additional connections, you can really, leverage then to obviously connect to other parts of the community and get some deeper voice, even with the product teams, right? And again, you need that passion, to become an MVP. And, it's not about it was never the goal, to become an MVP back in the days. It was more or less, I want to be part of that community. And the MVP award was just something additional, which I was super happy and proud about, but it was never the goal to become an MVP at one point. But again, it was a fantastic experience.
Now, I would always argue you can't sustain the effort of being an MVP if it isn't just part of your routine. Because it's a year over year thing, right? I mean, there's a sort of a constant evaluation going on. So if it's not part of your work, if it's not part of your routine of what you do day in, day out, you're not going to survive as an MVP. Anybody can make a push for a year, but for it to last, it's like, this is what I do. It's what I enjoy doing. And so if that measures up to an MVP award, great.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I see so many people they do something for 3, 4, 5 months or a year. And then because they don't have the passion for it, they just stop, right? Yeah. And I think that is, as you said, you need the passion.
Well, yeah. And there's another reality, which is, and I think this is very legitimate, when Microsoft changes, as it did the past few years, shifting its focus to the cloud, if that isn't your area of passion, it doesn't make sense for you to be an MVP anymore either. And we saw a lot of churn, a lot of change in the MVP program in that time.
Oh, yeah. It depends a little bit on what you're doing, right? For me, it was really, when I started, it was all about virtualization and Hyper-V mm-hmm. and all that. That was basically where my passion was in. And that was also the first time I was then awarded, was because my community efforts in the Hyper-V community. But then as it went on, there were other things coming in. We switched to doing the whole data center part with System Center and other stuff. And then when Microsoft Azure came along and grew, that became the next thing, which my career moved. And then so I had to adjust, obviously, same thing for the MVP contributions, right?
Well, it's a logical pattern, though. I totally get your path, right? You get smitten with virtualization, and you start changing your data center around to utilize multiple loads per hardware. You get the management crisis that is that many VMs, and tools like System Center make it possible to manage that. And those combinations of things, that is cloud, right? I mean, fundamentally, cloud is ultra virtualized machines across a backplane of hardware.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. It's like always like one thing I always tell people, like when we talk about cloud, especially when we talk about like PaaS services or even serverless computing, I always tell them, you wouldn't believe how many servers you need to run actually serverless.
It's very, very true, right? That we actually granulated it to the point where there's so many more instances of things, whatever you want to actually call it. Yeah, the actual instance of a server doesn't matter much anymore. It's the more of an instance of things.
Yep.
So you're obviously your work now completely focused on the reality of cloud and cloud like architectures in the office data centers as well.
Yeah. I'm now part of the Azure engineering teams. And we as cloud advocates, we are really part of the engineering. We're not based in like outside of this organization. We're really in cloud and AI, and then we are under commerce and ecosystem. And then in developer relations. And that is really helpful when we do our job, right? We need to have very direct access with the engineering teams itself, with the teams for different services. So we get obviously the information how things work, and we can help them out, create and deliver content. And the other part is really gathering that feedback from the communities and customers to find out what is working and what is not working, and then bring that back to the different engineering teams so we can make our products better.
And this reality of the hybrid data center, like this is never going away, right? For a long time, I believed folks were believing that we moved to the cloud, but it's never 100% move.
No, I 100% agree with that. I mean, obviously, depending on the company you're working for, you have obviously sometimes different viewpoints in that. But for me, very important, and that is always when I talk with people, when I have presentations, what I mention is last year's Ignite, where Jason Sanders had a keynote directly after Satya. And for those who don't know, Jason Sanders is basically the engineering lead for the Azure engineering teams, directly under Scott Guthrie. And he basically said that we believe that hybrid is an end state for our customers, mm-hmm. and not a in-between state until everything is moved to the cloud. And I think that acknowledging that and saying that publicly is very important for our customers to understand that we're actually listening to their needs and actually like say, hey, if you run something in the cloud, that's great. We want to definitely help you with that. But if you run something in your factory, your store, in your local data center, we're going to help there too, right?
Right.
And there are very good reasons to actually run in a hybrid environment.
Yeah, it's kind of unavoidable. We always have compute somewhere, and arguably all we're getting is more compute. The idea that we'd only use quote unquote somebody else's compute seems silly. It's just a question of how seamless we make those connections.
Yep, exactly. And again, if you look at a lot of the architecture from different applications and your environment, sometimes you just don't want to have the dependencies to the cloud, right? If you think about one of my favorite examples is if you have a factory, like a large scale factory, mm-hmm. Where you produce your products, and you don't have a good internet connectivity, or the internet connectivity goes down, you don't want the whole factory to stop, right? So you want to have some compute so you can run your factory, but then maybe you take advantage of the cloud in a way that for the long-term data or analyze, you just basically send that data to the cloud and leverage that. I think there are many more examples, again, like where you... I always call it the technology challenge. Like that is when you don't have an internet connectivity or your internet connectivity, the latency is too high for your applications to do so. Or if you also like have like regulations in place where you just can't store data outside of your country, for example, and we don't have a Azure region in your country.
Which that number is getting smaller and smaller, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like the data regionality now, you can get a Microsoft data center in a lot of places these days. But I do like the idea that the real-time functionality of a given operation like a factory should be self-contained. And it's the latent interactions, it's the analysis, the order cycles, and so forth. Those can be bound externally and possibly through cloud.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That is like, if you look at, especially if you look at, this is kind of like the mid and long-term thing of looking at it. On the other hand, we also have a lot of companies which currently run everything in their own data center right now, right? And they're thinking about, okay, how do I move to the cloud, or how do they actually leverage the cloud? I always tell them, hey, you can also use Azure Hybrid Services to make your on-premises environment better, right? It's not that you need to move everything there and you only can take advantage of the cloud by moving things there. You can also use Azure Hybrid Services to make your on-prem better and use it as a control plane, for example.
And Azure Hybrid Services, this is not a product. This is sort of a line of stuff.
Yep, exactly. So when I speak about Azure Hybrid Services, that's also sometimes very interesting for customers, especially when we now had this big push since last Microsoft Ignite, where we talked a lot about hybrid. It was like, is it like a new thing? Like everyone was talking about Azure Arc. But what a lot of people forget is that we already have a ton of hybrid services. Like, for example, if you think about Azure AD, which allows you to combine with your local Active Directory, and then you have Azure Active Directory, and you combine these both, or you use tools like Azure File Sync, which allows you to sync your on-premises file servers using Azure, and then sync it to different locations. Or Update Management is a great example, which it's unbelievable, like, how many people don't know about that service, because it basically allows you to orchestrate your update management. So you can go out and patch your systems, doesn't matter if it's Windows or Linux, wherever they are running, right? And I think those are all these services we already had for years,
right,
in our cloud. And we just did a very bad job promoting that.
Yeah, it's hard to make that necessarily visible. Well, there's so many things, right? Like, goodness knows, you open the Azure portal, you're kind of overwhelmed with the list.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, this is also like, it's hard. I mean, for everyone who starts with Azure and looks at it and then feel like, okay, there are so many services. I think we're far over 200 services right now. And so it becomes a very complex thing. But the great thing is always, what I try to do now is more kind of like a solution-based approach, right? So look out where are the customer challenges, and then how can we actually address these challenges? Instead of just going and speaking about products, we should talk more about it actually solving challenges and problems. And I think that is what I try to like change that little bit, because if someone doesn't search for a specific product because he doesn't know it, he will not find it, right? But if he will look for his problem and his challenges, and he will look for answers to that. And if we can provide these, then we can drive awareness for these different services.
Well, I guess that's exactly what Jason did, bring up this concept of the hybrid state is the end state.
Yeah. I think that is very, again, it's also like, where is the customer, right?
Yeah.
And we talked about this right now. I mean, if you have services on-prem and services in the cloud, you don't want to use different tools to manage that. You really want to have like one tool to basically manage your environment.
Well, yeah. And that's I was just thinking about the number of people who pushed back on using cloud, because I thought I think they got a sense it was an all or nothing proposition. If I go in the cloud, it has to all go in the cloud. And here's this thing, I can't move, so I'm not going to go to the cloud. Although, hey, it's 2020 now. People just aren't thinking that way near as much.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, and I completely agree with you here. I remember the times where we actually went out when I was still working for another company, and I went out and asked, talking to the customer, to try to convince him that the cloud is a good thing. And at one point, the whole thing changed, that I said, hey, I'm not going out to customers who are not convinced that the cloud is helping them. I'm better go out and help the customers who are convinced the cloud is helping them, and basically addressing this. So, the talks are going away, in terms of, can the cloud help us? in more of how can the cloud help us, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's inevitable that it's going to. It's just a question of what makes sense for you and what are those workloads you can necessarily peel off. And Thomas, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message.
This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. One of the leading projects called Already focuses on getting volunteers into the right place at the right time using cloud and mobile technology. HTBox builds and operates this and other applications on behalf of a variety of disaster response organizations, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. HTBox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity.
And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Thomas Maurer. And we're talking a little bit about, well, we've talked about the hybrid story of Azure as a whole, but you mentioned Arc. And was that announced at Build?
Azure Arc was announced back at Microsoft Ignite 2019 in Orlando.
In the past, that was the old world, right?
We were talking about it.
Yeah. Back in the old world when we could get together, when 25,000 of our closest friends could be in the same building together.
Exactly. Always great to announce something awesome when you're so close. Those times, again, good times. I hope at one point they're coming back. I really miss hanging out with people at these conferences and talking to them. That's definitely an interesting part of my job. So I'm really looking forward that this is coming back. No, but you're right. So Azure Arc, we delivered a couple of updates on Azure Arc at Build this year. So that's why you probably were aware that, again, like we had a lot of Arc talks about it and a lot of announcements during that time as well.
So what's Arc? We've got so many product names. Like, I'm hoping this actually makes my life simpler, not more complicated.
Yeah. So the funny part, so first, before I start talking about what Azure Arc is, the funny part is this is the first time, like when I joined Microsoft, where I was looking at how they actually create a, like the products and actually the services and then create a product launch and do the naming of things and stuff like that. And so that was really interesting, like behind the scenes stuff, which I experienced there. But so for Azure Arc, what it actually is, it's a way of us to extending the Azure platform to services and resources which run outside of Azure, right? That's one of the parts to basically use Azure as a control plane using Azure Resource Manager, not just for services in Azure, but also for services running outside of Azure. And then the other part we have next to this is also to deploy Azure services to any infrastructure. And that is really, for example, Azure Arc data services, which allows our customers to go out and deploy Azure SQL or Azure Postgres on their infrastructure. That can mean that it can run it on-prem in their data center, or they can even run it at another cloud provider, right? Nice. So if they want to have Azure SQL running at another cloud provider, they can do that now with Azure Arc. Well, I should say it's still in private preview, right?
Right.
But again, this is something where it definitely goes in the right direction. And then the other thing is when we talk about the control plane, currently we can add two other resources, if you will. One of them is servers. So we can basically add Linux and Windows servers to the Azure control plane and then use, for example, Azure Policy and other services to manage these servers. So we can make sure that they're compliant with our company policies or with certain standards. We can also go out and do RBAC control. So for example, if you have a administrator for your SharePoint servers, he can only see and manage these SharePoint servers as you can do in Azure, right? It's the same concept, but adding non-Azure resources.
Right. So this is the whole hybrid story you're talking about, is giving me cloud tools, Azure tools, normally built to do Azure things, but can also work into my own data center and to other people's clouds or other companies' clouds?
Yeah, exactly. So that's a very important point. It's when we talk about hybrid before, like in like years back or months back even, hybrid really for us just meant our local data center and maybe Azure.
And Azure, right.
But now when we talk about Azure hybrid now, we basically think about like on-prem, Azure, but also multi-cloud scenarios and even the intelligent edge, where we also, like, if you think about IoT and other stuff, that we also count all under that hybrid umbrella.
Yeah, that's an awesome way to think about it. Although I can't imagine you deploying Azure SQL anything other than to Azure.
Yeah, that was one of the requests we had from like customers was, okay, hey, Azure SQL is great. Like, we love that it's a service. We don't need to take care of patching. We love the scalability of it. We love the security of it. But not everything, and that goes back to what we discussed before, not everything can run in Azure itself, right?
Right.
We cannot leave, for example, some data needs to stay in our data center for regulatory reasons. Or like, again, if we go back to the factory example, we want to use Azure SQL as a service in our factory, but we don't want to have that connection to the cloud in that case. And so that is where you can go out now with Azure Arc and deploy these Azure data services. And I think another like interesting part of Azure Arc is the third one is the Azure Arc enabled Kubernetes clusters, mm-hmm. right? So a lot of companies, when they invest in containerizing their solutions, they run Kubernetes clusters, and obviously Azure Kubernetes Service is a great place to run these containers. But if you want to run them again in your own local data center, or even in another cloud provider,
right.
With Azure Arc, you can connect these as well and start managing also these Kubernetes cluster, and applications you deploy on these.
So, I mean, Kubernetes is an orchestrator. This is an orchestrator for an orchestrator?
Well, it's not directly. You still keep your Kubernetes orchestrator, right?
Right.
It's not gonna remove that. You still use your native Kubernetes tools you're using to manage that.
Right.
But what you get is right now you get that view. So you get it. You can see at one point then all your Kubernetes clusters wherever they are running. So
right.
You can see, make sure that, okay, well, get an overview, especially if you're a large company, you want to know where your services and applications are running. Then the next part really is, as I said, for servers, there's a possibility to apply policies to your Kubernetes cluster to make sure that your cluster is configured in the right way. And you can do that for Azure Kubernetes Service Clusters, AKS. But now with Azure Arc, you can also extend that to like clusters running in your data center. And
or elsewhere.
Or elsewhere,
yeah.
Exactly. I'm always, when I speak about data center, they could actually run anywhere, right?
Yeah,
so you could actually manage your Kubernetes cluster running at another cloud provider using the Azure portal, right?
Which is crazy to think about, but that's because you're not touching AKS per se, right? You are cutting on the instrumentation of the other provider or of your data center to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, in the end, what is Arc actually doing? Just creating templates to be able to push to these different endpoints?
So there are two things to it. So one is the part where you actually have policies and you can assign those to the clusters and they will basically make sure that you're basically compliant with these policies. And the other thing for applications, it uses a concept called GitOps, where you basically push your application code and containers into a Git repository.
Right.
And from there on, you basically get sent deployed to your Kubernetes cluster, and you can configure that using Azure Arc. So you can make sure, hey, which cluster should basically go to which Git repository, and then take the application from there. And as soon as the application gets updated, for example,
mm-hmm.
It redeploys it or like makes the changes to it.
Yeah, that sounds pretty, that's pretty cool. I got to think that the big thing here is just being able to manage VMs wherever you are. Like just that alone for a tip, you know, I think folks that are just getting into containers are sort of experimenting with certain classes of apps that need to be there. But virtually everybody I talk to, they've got VMs. some of their on-premises. Now they're moving some into the cloud, maybe the one, more than one cloud provider. The idea that I would have a view of all of that and could manage all of that, that seems hugely powerful. Like, what a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be honest, people, when I speak to people and show them that, they immediately get like, oh, wow, that is actually pretty cool.
And I need that. That's just the thing. It's like, yep, need that. Got that problem. I got too many VMs in too many places.
Exactly. And this is like one of the best examples. I love that is one of our customers, for example, he runs VMs in his stores, right? So he has stores all over the place. And
oh, interesting.
Running the store, they have some software, which is a pretty old software. That's why it doesn't run on any past service or anything. It's like a traditional piece of software, which runs on his operating system. And so he runs, for example, Hyper-V servers or small Hyper-V clusters in these stores. Mm-hmm. And then he basically needed a VPN connection to that store. He needed to make sure that like the admins.
He's RDPing to each one of them. Like just the list of entries for all that RDPing on all those VPN connections.
Exactly.
For a significant number of stores. That's crazy.
Exactly.
But you also see the power of what he's doing there too. I mean, maybe it's just a limitation of the software, but again, that store is self-contained. If that internet connection goes down, they're still able to sell.
Exactly.
They've got their infrastructure local, but to give him a management solution, he can actually see everything that's going on across all those stores and maybe do some sweeping updates too. Like, you've got backup solutions, you've got redundancy. That store can burn down. You haven't lost anything because you've got images of those VMs somewhere else. Like, there's a lot of strength to what he's got there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is exactly the important part, right? Like setting all these things up, like you can imagine setting up all these VPN connections ends up in endless troubleshooting of network connectivity, right?
all the time. Yeah, without a doubt.
Because you're not just relying on internet connectivity. You're also relying on the VPN itself. Mm-hmm. And you don't have trained IT staff in all of these stores.
No,
you just have like salespeople. And so you need to take over the complexity of that. And with Azure Arc for Servers, for example, the only thing he needs to do is install an agent on that server or on the servers he wants to manage. Mm-hmm. And they have an outbound connectivity using HTTPS to the Azure APIs.
Right.
And that's basically it.
So the VPN goes away. It's still wicked secure because it's up to that machine to make its connection outward to Azure. And then through ADD or AAD, you're able to poke through to it. Like it's tight. But it's really simple too. It's a lot less complicated. It might even be less expensive. Like I'm just thinking about all those VPN licenses alone.
Yeah. I mean, I can't really, I mean, depends on, I don't even know the costs for that.
Sure.
For like the VPN appliances and all that. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, it makes it so easier, right? Because he also does most of the cases he wants, like what he needs to do with these, systems is he needs to monitor them to see if when they go down that he is able to do something against it.
Keep them healthy.
Exactly. He needs to make sure that they're running and are maintained. So he needs to basically patch them. And automatically the best way of doing that, is to automatically patch them, right? So he can create maintenance windows and scheduled update deployments using Azure Update Management. Mm-hmm. And the third thing, what he really needs to do is like making sure that, for example, he can deploy certain settings to these servers and make sure that, for example, like they have secure password settings or they are in the right time zone and all of that. And for that, he can now use Azure Policy to do that management part.
Yeah, you know, this may not be the sexiest piece of this product in terms of, you know, compared to containerization or data services and so forth, but knowing how many organizations have VMs in multiple locations, all of that updating, all of that management to just take away all that pain. Like you'll make a friend that day, Thomas. Like my goodness, that is hard work every day. And as we eliminate some of that complexity and get a little more seamless, like people are going to get really productive.
I completely agree with you. Obviously, it's so funny because I just had a talk, with our team where we like talked about this and we were like, well, everyone goes out and talks about containers and data services and all the fancy things we can do with machine learning and all of that. But like, if we look at the IT departments out there, and they still need to manage like
VMs,
they're like large VMs. They have this.
Well, and they keep getting told, your answer is turn this VM off, switch it over to a software as a service model or some other services. Like, there's no service for this. I need to live with this VM. Please make my life better too.
Exactly. And with that, we can really address this.
Yeah.
I'm also super happy that we have all like today, we basically can really give you free or give our customers free different options, right? So they have legacy applications. Mm-hmm. Or let's say traditional applications which run in VMs or even on physical machines, which they can manage with Azure Arc. They can manage their Kubernetes clusters and their containerized applications using Azure Arc. And then they also can deploy Azure SQL using Azure Arc, right? So they get like already that huge set of different services, and it doesn't matter where in their stage they are, they can take advantage off Azure.
Yeah, no, it really, and it, you really are providing a service in that model too, that now I have this space I can function in where my existing stuff, which may not be the ideal architectures, but you know, we can look at, should I move some of these VMs into the cloud? Like, would this store function better if we did get the VM out of the on-premise machine and into a cloud machine? I can do that experiment without a whole lot of danger, without any threat at all, really, and say, oh, let's be more dependent on connectivity. Does that make more sense? Can we retire that hardware? Or, you know, start evolving services and do a mix. Some of the stuff's running on the on-premise machine. Some of it's now running in a cloud service. Like, you get all that. You've now created, a backplane where I'm free to experiment, to evolve this thing. I don't have to do this. You know, on Monday, all these machines will be turned off. We're going to go onto the new system with, you know, no chance of failure at all.
Yep, exactly. And the great thing also, what comes with this is what I have seen many, many times, and I'm sure you have seen that and heard that too, is like different people have like tools for different services and applications,
yes.
Right? So they use different management tools for different servers running on-prem. They use different tools running in Azure. They use different tools if it comes to Kubernetes. They use different tools for databases and so on. They have like this huge set. And it also not just depends on the service itself, but also where is that service running? And with this, we can really start addressing that.
Right. You stop caring where stuff is and care more about what stuff is.
Exactly. And again, I'm not saying like you need to like give all your tools away, right?
No.
You can still use your tools. You want to manage your servers, your Kubernetes clusters and your data services, but you get that extra control using Azure Resource Manager.
Well, let me poke you on that question exactly then. If I'm using Azure Arc to speak to a VM in a remote location, am I able to run another tool on my machine that would be able to poke through that connection to that remote machine?
So currently it would not, like, not directly from your side, right?
Okay.
You would basically go out and use something like, for example, Azure Guest Configuration Policies to change settings on your server. It's not right now. It's not there's no option for you to go out and, for example, like RTP into that machine.
Right.
That's not the case. Something else you can use, and that is a new feature we just released to the public. Again, this is also in preview. Is the usage of extensions for your servers when you use Azure Arc. You're pretty sure you're familiar with VM extensions in Azure, mm-hmm. which allows you to run different tools, and especially the custom script extension, which allows you to just fire a script against that server to build some sort of automation or do some configuration.
Right.
And now you can also use that for your Azure Arc machine. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yep. So,
those virtual machine extensions, and those have been around a long time.
Exactly.
They also will work through Arc. So if you get familiar with that, here's where that's wicked cool. You're used to using those extensions on VMs in Azure. The idea that I could run those on machines running in other locations, that would be astonishing.
Exactly. And that is, and this is the interesting part. This is not just for interesting for our customers,
mm-hmm.
but also well, at the end, it is interesting for our customers in any way, but it's also interesting for our internal engineering teams, right? So if they create a solution which works at working with the VM extension, so for example, Azure Backup, Update Management, Azure Monitor, these features, they use the VM extension APIs. And now think about if we take now the similar APIs and put them on on-premises servers, and now the teams which develop these solutions, like for example, Azure Monitor is a great example for this, or others, they can now, without changing a lot of code, take advantage of the same APIs.
Nice. Yeah, that does open the door to a lot of possibilities here that you start. Again, you said this already, just don't care about the location anymore. It works the same.
Yep.
So still in preview, how far away is this from being a product? Or can anybody get at it? It's just the preview version.
So Azure Arc for Servers and Azure Arc Enabled Kubernetes Cluster, they are in public preview.
Public preview. So you can use it if you want to. Just understand it's a preview product.
Exactly. So you can go out today. You can go and start installing the agents and connecting your servers and clusters to that. You just need to be aware that you obviously have limited support, like just the preview support, obviously, for that, which you need to be aware of. For Azure Arc Data Services, there we are in private preview. And if you're interested in running that, if you go to the Azure portal, you search for Azure Arc, you will find a page where all three of these services show up. And then there's a link for you to sign up to the Azure Arc Data Services private preview.
And that's a bit more complicated product to anyway. So I totally get that. Also free while in preview too, although it makes me wonder what it's going to cost when it comes down the pipe.
Yeah, I think we didn't really talk about release dates or costs yet.
No.
When you look at the server part, for example, what is interesting is the Arc part, the control part basically is free, but you're going to deploy, for some scenarios, you're going to deploy the Microsoft monitoring agent on that machine, which then sends data to Log Analytics. And for that, you obviously need to pay, because that is something you could already do before, but now it's just handled.
Right. So you do need to have Log Analytics set up, and you are going to be consuming additional data. So there, even though Arc itself is in preview, it's going to depend on services you need to pay for.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's fair. Well, and part of this is you want all that logging infrastructure. You want to be using Azure Monitor so that you can see when these machines are in distress and they're notifying you rather than you having to go check on them.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of solutions also have dependency on Log Analytics, right? So for example, the update management solution basically uses the Log Analytics agent for two things. First of all, to get the logs for the updates, so Azure Update Management knows which updates are installed and which updates are needed. And then the second part is they also use that agent as a hybrid worker to basically then go out and trigger the updates on that machine.
Yeah, I know it's not up to you, Thomas, but I don't know why you guys charge for Log Analytics. Everybody needs it. It's like if you have an Azure account, you pretty much have to have this. It should just be built into the base price.
Yeah, the good thing about this is I'm not involved in making these decisions.
Yeah, no, not your job at all, and I'm not going to go over it on that. But the number of times I end up at this exact point where it's like, you have to use Log Analytics. It needs to be there. It needs to be on everything. And it should be table stakes, right? It's like, I also need a keyboard and a mouse on my computer.
Yeah, I agree with that. You need it a lot. And again, a lot of, as you said, like a lot of services obviously also depend on Log Analytics. Absolutely.
Well, instrumentation is a critical part. And it sounds like Arc just is going to make my life easier for instrumenting this array of machines, no matter where I have them in my hybrid cloud.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Yes. So Azure Arc really bridges the gap between your on-prem environment and Azure, right?
Right.
I hope you see what I did what I did there.
Ah, yes, that arc of concern is really what we're talking about. Thomas, thanks so much for chatting with me. This is a really cool product. Folks need to pay attention to it.
Thank you very much, Richard. It was great being here.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.